Hey, this is Michael from Modern Musician, and before we start the show, I wanted to let you know that right now, I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Specifically, we're looking for artists that have at least one song professionally recorded. It doesn't have to be, you know, Beyoncé-level production, but it just needs to be something that you feel proud of and you're ready to promote. We're looking for artists who are really just poised for growth and are ready to go all in on their music. And yeah, there's this saying that when the student's ready, the mentor appears. And so that's you. If you're truly ready for it, then I want to invite you to apply for a free coaching call with our team. The goal is to launch an automated system that allows you to build a loyal and engaged fan base so you can make a sustainable income with your music online without having to sell your soul to social media or post 20 times a day on TikTok. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application and share one of your songs. I'm looking forward to checking out your music, and now let's start the show.
I hate to say this, but if you're questioning yourself, you might be in the wrong place. Because the people I know who have been at it and continued, we all doubt ourselves. We have those moments. Mm-hmm. But those moments are so few in comparison to even when you have that thought going, wait a minute, shaking your head and getting back to what you love. And if you're pushed out of it, if you're trying to make a financial living from it and that's all you want to do, then I understand. If you can't do that, that's tough.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music. You can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. Yeah! All right, I'm excited to be here with my new friend, Michael Toll. Michael is the founder and director of operations at Mellow Music Group, hailed by Forbes as the most successful new indie rap label of the decade. That's some pretty high praise. He's the executive producer of over 200 albums, collaborating with legends like Brother Ali, Pete Rock, and Jewel Ortiz. He's a powerhouse in sync licensing with music featured by brands like Apple, Gatorade, and HBO, plus Grammy-nominated production credits with Lizzo. So today, I'm excited to have him on the podcast to talk a little bit about content and release consistency. And especially nowadays with just the state of the world and the music industry, with how easy it is to create music in a home studio and put it out there, how do you really cut through the noise and kind of stick around long enough to actually achieve meaningful success and results? So you're a person who knows a thing or two about that. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today.
Thank you. You guys just had on one of our friends, Terry Cole, the other day.
Okay. Awesome.
A fellow Ohio label that started around the exact same year I think we did. So, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. That was a great conversation. Well, let's go ahead and let's dive into it. So, you know, maybe for anyone that this is the first time connecting with you, could you share a little bit about yourself and how the record label started?
Sure. So, originally I was going to school thinking I wanted to be a writer, write novels, and maybe be a professor or something like that. So I was studying writing, working on it, learning to tell my story and writing. But during that process, like a lot of college kids and young people, music was, you know, a huge part of my life. So diving into that, it just became more and more of my life and wanted to be more and more what I did. So after I graduated, I was working on applying to grad schools, working on to get an MFA. And in the meantime, I was still super involved in music, just creating it and having fun with it and just a consumer, a fan. And when 07 happened and everything had kind of fallen out from people, I had an opportunity to just kind of start doing more with music. So that led me to dropping our first release in 2007, though I'd been planning it for a few years and working on things. So it was fortuitous time to jump into it with the shift to digital, where a lot of the majors had all this overhead, offices, A&Rs, and they weren't ready for the digital transfer yet. So I didn't have those liabilities in terms of assets, the fixed cost, so to speak. And so I was able to be really flexible and roll with the industry at a time when it was kind of just developing, when they were having the digital distributor wars of the early days. So that's kind of where the business started. But my first music interest started with just being a kid growing up in Ohio, kind of middle class, divorced parents, latchkey kid. And my older brother was a music video director, one of the early ones. And so getting to see him off in LA from a distance where we weren't close because it wasn't cell phone time. So it was just, you know, you'd get a VHS tape in the mail from your big brother to the family of the stuff he's working on, and kind of gave it that shine that I knew I wanted to be involved in that in the background. So that was sort of behind everything that I was doing.
Cool. Yeah, it's really interesting hearing the state of the music industry kind of at that point and the advantages that you were given because you were an early adopter and a fast mover as it related to the digital revolution. And it seems like that is one of those things with, you know, David and Goliath are sort of like the independent artists or startups in many cases are able to move faster and take advantage of kind of like the lay of the land. So I'm curious what your perspective is, having, you know, kind of benefited from being a part of that wave with going to digital. Right now, there's maybe a comparable wave with things that are happening with technology and with AI. And maybe it's fundamentally different due to the fact that like AI in some ways can be like replacing, you know, certain roles that we used to do as musicians. So, but at the same time, you could see it in a similar way where it's actually making it easier to do what used to need overhead and different, yeah, different limitations, which you don't have anymore. So I'm curious to hear where you fall on the line of, you know, these kinds of tools. And do you recommend that people kind of lean into it, or do you think it's something that we should shy away from?
I mean, I think calling it AI is sort of a disadvantage because it gives it this robotic. Anyone who grew up with movies, older generation, is going to feel stress from that, as if it's some otherworldly thing. But calling it a new program or a new tool is really all it is. It has a lot more capabilities. But one of the things I'm really believe in is you don't feel lost in your work as long as it's when you're resting on your laurels and things are going well and you're doing other things that you don't know where you belong. But when you're doing your work, tools like AI are just, they naturally come up. You use them when you need to, whether that's ChatGPT or whether that's some video editing or whatever you're using, and musicians creating with it too. Once you just start using it, it doesn't feel as threatening. It is more accessible. So it raises the bar in terms of what you have to do to show proficiency in your skill set. But I think, you know, there may be some things in the future where people are threatened by it in terms of it creating artificial music people might like. But I don't think most people involved in music need to worry about that as long as they stay creating. We'll let the legal channels sort out what they're trained on and how you're compensated.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that a lot. And it reminded me of an analogy that I've heard before, that it's important to like always be moving forward, having momentum, kind of like riding a bike, where if you're resting on your laurels, like you said, or you're kind of just like sitting still, then it gets really hard to balance and you end up kind of like falling off the bike. But it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, as long as you continue to show up and use these tools to work and actually move forward, then it's sort of like a bike where you can maintain balance, and that you tend to find balance as long as you're kind of, you're moving forward and you're not just resting on your laurels. Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. I hadn't really heard that perspective on it before.
Yeah, it's definitely, from a personnel standpoint, it's tough. Be willing to cut and add as needed and allow people to adapt to it. Because, you know, when we started, it would take a room of 20 people to do what the digital distributors were offering. And you could do that by yourself. So that was the advantage. And likewise, if you have a team full of videographers and all these people, if you're paying them the previous rates, which is great, there's a new kid out there who can do it himself on his phone. And so you have to adapt with that and then compensate those people and just stay involved. I think as you get older and as you've done it, there's also the expectation kind of that you're going to always be the big guy in the room with people and hiring the big, you know, we have people come at us saying they want to do a $40,000 video. And I'm thinking, the big budget video days are gone for most people. That's not even close. But they see you as a big label, or they see you as something. And it's a reminder that you've always got to stay scrappy. You've always got to do what needs done in the current marketplace. And there's so much content right now that refining everything down to what you truly want to work on is pretty important.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like what you're saying is that in order to be competitive, you know, like part of the market is that you have to compete with what other people are doing for the prices that they're doing it. And so with these tools, it's a, you know, a double-edged sword in some ways, in that it's going to make it a lot easier to record high quality content. And yeah, I'm curious, mindset wise, I feel like one of the blocks that a lot of people have, or fears, concerns, and I mean, it's totally valid, but also like, it would be great to hear your perspective on folks who are concerned about AI replacing some of those roles, like those paying jobs that people have relied on as like a source of income for, like, you know, the videos and for all the different roles. How do you kind of view these tools, and what would your sort of response be to someone who's like, well, we shouldn't use these because, you know, people need this like for their jobs, and so like AI is evil and we should never use it?
If you're working in AI, that is your job, so use it. If you're working in something else, you use it just as much as is needed. And I think, you know, artists sometimes are being forced to act like a label themselves, forced to do their own marketing, forced to do this stuff because of the DIY push over the last decade or so. But when they remember they're artists and do what they do, that's all you need to do. You don't need to be threatened by any of this. It's just, like I said, the refinement of what are you doing and does it help you? You're naturally going to see, as a musician, though I'm not creating music like that myself, you know, these tools are coming into your production skills. But the one thing is, AI is always trained on something. So it can't be trained on your life experience unless you give it to them. So your own life experience is always going to be unique. And I think, like, I already, so many people use ChatGPT to write most of the bios and journalism. And you can see right away, if you've been involved in the industry, and where we work with indie artists, I can read these little write-ups in ChatGPT and be like, okay, you stole this phrasing from Jeff Weiss at the LA Times. You stole this one from this writer, because I've been there for 20 years reading these articles that it's trained on, where it's pulling this stuff from. And the problem with that is it sounds okay. It works on a surface level, but the depth isn't there, and that doesn't resonate with people. Whereas when you dive in there and try to say something generative, which maybe AI will catch up too soon, but not yet, you're going to have something that resonates a little deeper. And that's true for the artist too. But even as the business, you're going to be able to offer something in a textural layer that's a little more important. And, you know, I think I mentioned my brother in videos earlier, and it's like his work early on had a sort of life experience and grit to it that gave him, it resonated, and it stands the test of time. If you look back at his videos, they still to this day will move you in a way that people adopting the newest technology and making something glossy and fast cutting doesn't. It washed away. Just like when we all started on Instagram long ago and they had those little borders or frames around the pictures. I don't know if anyone still remembers that, but it quickly looked dated. Whereas in the beginning it was new. So if you're doing your own thing, it's going to stand out and be unique.
Awesome. Yeah, so it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, one thing that AI can't really do right now is have a soul and kind of have that characteristic of unique expression that you can add to it. While, like, it is a very powerful tool, if you use it as a tool in order to kind of streamline the workflows and use it like you would use any other tool. Yeah, you know, there's a, I think it was a book that I read recently that was comparing AI and sort of just like how technology disrupts markets and labor, and kind of answering that question of, well, what about all the people that lose their jobs? And yeah, I thought that the point was fairly well made of, well, like, you know, 90% of people used to be in the market of farming, and like that was the need of the time. And then these factory machines kind of like came along, and now it's less than, I don't know, like 5%. And and like a lot of people lost their jobs, but there's all of these new jobs that just didn't even exist before. And you couldn't even imagine, like, you know, the idea of being a full-time creator with videos and content and streaming and, you know, these things that have opened up. And so I feel like that kind of aligns with your way of putting it, which was, as long as you just keep showing up and you keep, you know, growing and learning and adapting and using these tools as is, you know, as is valuable to, you know, to yourself and other people, that you can go along for the ride. New jobs, new different things come up, but certainly, like, you know, it's changing the landscape of what actually is needed, and many of those jobs that were needed before actually aren't going to be needed anymore in the same way that they used to be.
Yeah, I've mentioned this in other places, but before, I guess, automation of industrial age, tools were really important to the craftspeople. And they had their own spirit, their own soul, when you look back at old literature. And when those were thrown out for efficiency so that we could all use the same tool at the same factory, something was lost. But likewise, even today, whatever tools you're most comfortable with, you will produce better quality products with it. So whether that's the microphone you know how to record with, or whether that's the particular production machine that you're good with, knowing that tool is what makes you an expert at it. And the same thing I think will happen with AI. Like, you know, you give my parents some of the AI tools that we use, and they don't get the same results that we do. And so I think it's just learning your tools as they grow.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, learning how to use the tools is just as important as like having the tools in the first place. You know, I feel like the tools are extremely important themselves in that, like, you know, if you're racing to cut down a tree against someone that has a chainsaw versus someone that has like just their fingernails, then, you know, like the chainsaw is going to give someone a huge advantage, even if they're like, you know, not great with it. But, you know, if they don't know how to turn it on or how to use a chainsaw, it could be very dangerous, or, you know, it could be less effective than someone that actually knows how to use a hacksaw to cut it down. So it does seem like it's like you need the tools and you also need the education or the knowledge to kind of like how to use those tools.
But, you know, one thing about having been in business for a while now, I noticed is I've really been every year, every quarter, every 6 months, whatever it is, whenever I go back into that strategic vision or that planning phase or that just sitting with a piece of paper and writing out what I'm trying to do, I realize I've been doing the same planning for 20 years, since before I had a label for 5 years. Mm. It's always a little more refined and a little more reflective of reality, and I learn more. Mm. But it's much like when I watch like good film directors, right? Like you watch Michael Mann's Manhunter, and then you watch Heat 10 years later, and it's the same movie, but done really well. And I think that remembering that you can get knocked off your horse, you can get sidetracked, you can make bad decisions and lose everything. But if this is your career, if this is what you do, and this is what you love, you'll just come right back and use that to your advantage. And that's, you know, that's one of the things I think artists have a challenge with right now is when you're young, maybe you're being sold constantly stardom, success, get in quick, make it all. Mm. No one's reminding you it's a career. You're a musician for life. Like even if, you know, if your goal is just to get rich and quit, I probably don't want to hear what you have to say. But if your goal is to make good music and express yourself and live and do this forever, those are the kind of people I want to be involved with. Mm. And that's timeless. So.
Good stuff. You're just joking backstage before we started this about the power of now and being timeless with the last name Tool. But speaking like into that concept of consistency and like showing up and being willing to kind of weather the storms and the ups and downs and not just kind of expecting the quick, you know, instant wins. How do you encourage someone who's maybe listening to this or watching this right now that maybe really needs to hear kind of a message of sticking through and kind of and seeing it out? Maybe they're kind of questioning like, you know, do I really have what it takes to be successful? Maybe for context, let's say maybe they have released either their first song or their first 3 to 5 songs. They're like, I haven't like had a big breakout yet. And I'm not making any money enough yet to be sustainable. And I'm just like, should I stay? Should I keep doing this? Is it even possible for me? Or should I, you know, go back to working a different job and give up on my music? Like what would your recommendations be for someone to kind of think through their long-term vision?
I mean, I hate to say this, but if you're questioning yourself, you might be in the wrong place. Because the people I know who have been at it and continued, we all doubt ourselves. We have those moments. Mm-hmm. But those moments are so few in comparison to even when you have that thought going, wait a minute, shaking your head and getting back to what you love. And if you're pushed out of it, if you're trying to make a financial living from it and that's all you want to do, then I understand. If you can't do that, that's tough. But that's often, I've seen so many artists who thought that's what they were going to do and have to go back to a job and thought it was the end of the world, but that job freeing them up to truly make it creative again and coming back being more successful because of that. I think that some important things to remember if it's not working are to expand your education. you know, make sure you're surrounding yourself with people who are better than you, and not just in the I'm going to go read Malcolm Gladwell type of way, but in the like, be uncomfortable. Recognize that you maybe aren't good enough yet, and work with people who are better. And you, when you work with people who are better than you, you usually have to pay to play. It's education. When I started the label, I had no business being a record label. So I had to pay, which meant I had to work a side job to fund the label that I loved. Mm-hmm. And I think artists need to do the same thing. If you need to learn something, you're going to have to pay for lessons from someone better. You're going to have to, if your business skills are off and you need a manager, you know, you have to bring something to the table for them, or an attorney who can give you some contacts. It's really important to remember that you might have to go work a side hustle, but pour that money into your career, because that's self-investment and career investment. But there really can't be, again, ask if you see yourself being a musician in 20 years. You know, when you look at the truly great musicians, they're still outperforming at 60. They didn't stop. They still like it. They're still working. So you should want to be doing this.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. So first of all, just kind of calling out, like, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, you don't believe in your music, if you don't have that level of like dedication, then it's unlikely in the first place that you're going to be able to kind of weather that storm. Cause it requires a huge amount of confidence and belief and wherewithal to kind of keep going and just knowing that like you're doing this for the long term. But also the point they made around surrounding yourself with people that make you feel uncomfortable and stretching you to a bigger level. I feel like sometimes it's kind of trendy right now to like hear the opposite side of that coin, which is like, don't compare yourself at all to other people. And like, you know, you just be yourself and you're perfect exactly as you are. And like, you know, there's some truth to like, you know, on a deep level, like, you know, you are enough and you're yourself and it's okay to be yourself. But then like on the level of growth and personal development and improvement, like, you know, surrounding yourself with people that are better than you feels uncomfortable, and comparing yourself to people who are, you know, further along than you makes you feel uncomfortable. But that discomfort also can drive you to be better and to rise up to that level that it actually deserves to be in the same room as those people. So I appreciate you calling that out and hopefully inspiring people to also be okay with surrounding themselves with people that make them feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Well, I would say I may be damaged, right? A lot of us may be damaged. We're products of capitalism. And if you're involved in this, you know, I'm not saying it's necessarily healthy to never feel satisfied. And I'm satisfied. Contentment is really important. So you can't find any contentment within that discomfort, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I often talk with my wife. It's like we sit there and we say, look at these people we know who are so happy and they're doing the exact same thing they've been doing for such a long time. And that isn't something I have. And it's not because I want to achieve so much more. I don't have some weird drive like I used to maybe in my 20s to do something. But like, I like the process of growth. And I know that that process is uncomfortable. But I do recognize that as Americans in particular, we are very productivity driven. We're very success driven. We're sold so many things that are in our subconscious that we don't even realize that it is important to unpack that and make sure you're doing it for the reasons you want to. And it's perfectly fine to have hobbies that don't generate income. I happen to, like I said, when I started, I was trying to be a writer and thought I'd be teaching. And I was running a tutoring kind of educational company for professors with kids here on sabbatical. And it was how I paid the bills. And I loved it. I was lucky to get to read literature and write stories and teach people that. But the music thing kept taking more and more time. It just wasn't making the money that would support things. The teaching company was paying for this. There was a point when it was like, okay, I'm putting 50 hours into this and I'm putting 40 into, and I'm not sleeping and I'm living on energy drinks. I have to choose which one, and music became that thing. So I don't know. I mean, that being driven was there for me, but I don't know if it needs to be for everybody. And I think that there's a freedom in realizing that music can also just be fun. Cause I do want to remind musicians, it's art. In my genres, in particular in hip hop, there's this competition that isn't always healthy. Whereas I like to view it as art and expression. And it's not going to be timeless if you haven't shared something from truly deep within your life, if you're not vulnerable, if you're not living and experienced. So it's also important to remember that, and monetary success doesn't measure your art's value.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So look, what you're saying is that it's important. You know, it's okay to be ambitious and to want to achieve goals and to really go for it. But you have to kind of temper that with balance and with also being content and enjoying and appreciating what you have, which can be, you know, sometimes easier said than done. And especially with our society, there's a lot of, you know, with capitalism in general, you know, there's a consumerism and a drive to do more and be better. So learning how to kind of ride that balance is an important thing to play on the edge of.
Well, I wish we as a culture valued music in a different way than we do right now, because I think music is something that should be just a regular part of your life. When I grew up, we were not musicians in our household. It wasn't a regular part. Dance wasn't a regular part of our life. When I married, you know, my wife's family all plays instruments. They'd play instruments at dinner. They'd sing. It was a part of their culture, which was cool. And it wasn't about a career. And I think that that's missing, because you often see 20-year-olds saying, I want to be a musician, right? Don't see 35-year-olds saying, you know what, this corporate career is just not working out the way, it's not as fulfilling. I think I want to go be a traveling musician. And that's a shame, because they maybe have the financial knowledge and understanding and could bring some management skills to being a quasi semi-successful musician at a level that's maybe more equal to, I can make 50 grand or I can make 100 grand making music, instead of I'm going to be a pop star and make millions. But you know, when you're 20 or when you're 15, you want to be an NFL player, an NBA player, a pop star. You want to be the top of whatever it is you imagine going for. And I think by the time you hit 30, we realize, I want a comfortable life. I want to do the things I love doing with my time. And I think music hasn't been sold enough to people as something that you can do that in, and that you can have a very good professional career without being a star.
That's a great message. It's funny, like, as you described that persona of like a, you know, mid 30, approaching 40 musician who decides to like, you know, to go for that and transition. That literally describes perfectly one of my business partners now. He started out as a client of our company. His name's Eli Lev, and he's an amazing human being. And he used to be an educator. He transitioned in his mid to late 30s. Now he's full time with his music, and he's, you know, exactly what you just described. He's like not huge, massive artist, but he's like full time. He's doing his first international tour right now. He's in Europe, and he's living that life. And it's exactly like you're saying. Like, it's possible now to kind of have that lifestyle and to be successful in a different kind of way from, you know, the way of the past where you had to be a household name. So, you know, for anyone that's listening or watching this right now, you know, if you had to share one piece of advice, if you could kind of go back in time and maybe to like your most challenging moment when you really needed some help or advice, what would you tell yourself and why?
I mean, they continue to happen, right? But I think that every time I faced a truly daunting challenge where my career was in peril, which happens from time to time, that's when two things: work through it, just work, like not with people. If you can shut off, take as much time to do some private work so that you reconnect to why you're doing it and what you're doing. And then the other thing is reach out to the people you do have in your circle and listen, even when they don't give you the best answer. So when I started, you know, I'm not close with my brother who's successful, right? And so when I started, I had really no contact. I don't know that he knew I was doing a record label. And at a certain point, I thought, man, if I had these things, I could really break out. I have some great records. And it was the first time ever, I'm like, all right, I'm going to take this shot and ask for a little bit of money. And it's funny looking back at what I asked for. It was not much. It was big for anybody, but not much compared to what you need to actually make something happen. And one, I wish I hadn't done that. But at the same time, when the answer is no to people, it makes you realize, oh yeah, I've got to do this myself. Because if it's a good idea, I'll find a way to make it work. Mm-hmm. And had people, whether that's family or friends, been able and given me that, I probably would have lost it and not learned how to actually generate income. Mm-hmm. Those challenges. So I think that asking people and then listening to them when they say no, think about what that means to you. Or maybe they'll give you great ideas. But usually it's the self-work. Even today, when I come into the office and there's a lot of people around, I find I go home saying, did I work? And of course I did, but it's a different type of work than the stuff that moves me forward. And it's those quiet moments where I get a good stretch of 4, 5, 6 hours alone working, that answers come to me. And through work, not just thinking about it. So.
Awesome. Yeah, good stuff. So it sounds like one of the things you'd recommend is leaning into the challenges, leaning into mistakes. And when you have a hard time, like generally that's when you become the most resourceful. And so you might not get the help that you're looking for always, but it's in those opportunities that you actually grow and you learn.
And it usually is you. Like it's usually you're the problem. It's usually not the people you think caused the problem. That's really important that I've learned, whether it's my own management of people, my own abilities, or other things like that. It usually, with time, I look back and say, oh, that was me. I created that issue.
I don't know why it just popped in my head. Was it Taylor Swift? Like, I'm the problem. It's me.
Yeah.
it's good. I mean, it seems like that is where self-growth really can happen, is when you turn inward and you take responsibility for where things are at, even if there's elements of truth to this other thing happened, there's a circumstance, or this person did this thing. It's like, sure, like it did, but like, what are you going to do about it? And how did you contribute to it? Taking ownership of that. So I'm curious, just you seem like the kind of person who has a great mindset around goal setting and staying consistent and like continuing to show up and kind of work through when challenges come up. What does your visioning process look like? What does your planning look like? We're approaching, it is the new year. At the time of recording this, it's a fresh new year. A lot of people are thinking about what they want to be different this year and who they want to become, what their goals are. So I'm curious, what do you do on a regular basis, whether that's like weekly, monthly, yearly, to kind of set some of those plans and stay consistent?
Early on, I did a lot of goal setting, a lot of lists, a lot of planning, meaning 20 years ago. And that process has just been I'm a natural list maker. I see my daughter making lists, and I realize it's maybe just a part of us. My dad in his house has a little piece of paper with lists. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of goal setting in a way. Mm-hmm. But I think I've reached a new understanding in the last couple of years that I think is pretty important, which was It's not my idea. I forget where this is from, but learning the difference between an objective and a result are really important. And sometimes we put things like make $1 million, or we put measurable things as the goal versus sort of an objective without a measurable thing to it, which is more of a mission, more of a purpose. Mm-hmm. It's hard to come up with one that matters to you. But if you can, then you have your key results under it as to how do you measure that? So if I say I want to be one of the most respected indie music labels, what does that mean? Like, how do you measure that? And the nice thing about setting an objective like that is it can be the kind of thing that other people can be inspired in your organization. They can't measure it. And so you get to define for yourself what that means. And that's important. So you can put your key results. Mm. Like, for me, it's like we have 200 records in the catalog. I don't know that that's good. I don't know if I need 10,000 or if I should have 100 that I'm focused on more. But for me, I've chosen what my metrics are going to be. So having the difference between setting objectives and then the key results that tell you you're there. And it also allows in conversation, which is going to come up a lot with employees, with artists, with just people to say why you're there without having a sort of mission statement of the company. You have an objective. Like, this is what we're trying to do. And then they don't get to define that for you. And I would keep it personal. I would keep the key results personal. People don't need to know how you measure your own success, and that will keep you driving towards it. But at this stage, I literally use an app, Remente, where I have a checklist of everything that I need to do. I call it my daily rituals, that if I do these things, it will help lead me to the key results. And if I do the key results, it'll help lead me to the objective. So I'm looking at it every day just as kind of a balance sheet of what I need to do. And some days I get all of it done. Some days I get 50% done. But overall, I can tell if I had a good week or not from that. And it also reminds me the purpose of these actions is that objective. You know, and I think as a label, we went through phases where you're trying to just put out more stuff, or just get more. And I'm in a phase now where I'm trying to reduce and do more for the people I'm working with, but less quantity.
Awesome. Yeah, I really like that. So it sounds like you're kind of like having a North Star. Like, it gives you guidance. Like, if you have an objective or a mission statement, you don't necessarily expect that you're going to like make it to the North Star, but it kind of gives you a direction. And so if you start there, then you also need to figure out like, what are some of the specific results and things to measure that kind of just let you know, like, am I moving towards it? So having almost like a mile marker that you're keeping track of as you're moving towards that North Star is a nice way to kind of make sure that you are inspiring and moving in the right direction, but also have personal checklists and to-dos that if you know, if you show up and you do X, Y, Z, that's going to help you to accomplish those meaningful steps towards that bigger goal.
Yeah, I worked through the idea with somebody who had become a real estate agent recently. And after kind of doing that for a few months, you know, it's a big landscape with a lot of people doing the same thing. And you're going to get the same information back, like you should do open houses, you should canvas neighborhoods. And so everyone's getting the same information. And if you ask most people their goal, it's probably a monetary level or maybe how many houses, which if you break it down is a monetary thing. But when I shifted them to the idea of, well, actually, they want to be one of the premier architectural real estates because that's their interest, like houses that have architectural value. Then they started setting their objectives around like, well, I need to be more involved in learning the history, the groups and people who are involved in this. And suddenly they're a more interesting person to talk to. And so they're attracting to them people who are interested in that topic as well. And so naturally people want to list houses with somebody who shares the same ethos as them. And they have a purpose and it makes it fun instead of just randomly doing anything to make money, which usually doesn't work.
Awesome. I like it. Well, Mello, this has been a fun conversation. I feel like Mello, you know, kind of encapsulates the conversation. I feel like Mello, but also like driven and mindset focused, which I appreciate. And for anyone that's listening or watching this right now who's interested in connecting more or seeing if it's a good fit for the types of services that you focus on that you offer for artists, what would be the best place for them to go to learn more?
Our website, mellomusicgroup.com, Mello, no W. Our Bandcamp to hear our music. And then, of course, our socials. We're on everywhere, Mello Music Group.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, I'm just realizing that I just called you Mello unintentionally because your name appears as Mello, but it's Michael, which is a name that I shouldn't have a hard time remembering.
No, it's funny. Our name, it's Mike Toll is what people used to call me. And the anagram of that is Mello Kite, which is like a message from Mello. So,
wow. There you go, man. Well, Michael, man, it's been great connecting today. Thank you for coming on here and being on the podcast and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Michael.
Yeah! Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.